From runasradio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 367, ELHO with guest Mike O'Neill. Recorded Friday, April 11th, 2014. Run As Radio is produced each week by Quap Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell, and thanks for listening to Run As Radio. Today, my guest is Mike O'Neill, who's a Microsoft Premium Field Engineer, works primarily on Exchange, has been dealing with lots of Exchange migrations coming from 2007 and 2010 up to Exchange 2013, and he's also one of the authors for eHello, the Exchange team blog. Welcome, sir.
Hi, Richard. Thanks for having me.
And so when I look at this blog, it just says by the Exchange team. Are you writing all of these posts, or are there a few contributors to it?
No, we actually have a number of contributors. And so the Exchange team author is the generic author that they give.
Right.
Sometimes you'll see stuff from, you know, specific individuals. Some of the noted posts, Brian Days out there, one of the geniuses of Microsoft, Ross Smith the IV, right? So I have a couple bylines in the from the authors.
Good.
But yeah, the Exchange team blog is a collaboration of PFEs and Exchange engineers, product group engineers to write information.
And I have run into situations in the past we've talked to a variety of PFEs where I think it's a little challenging to get feedback back into the product teams. But it sounds like you work pretty closely with the Exchange team.
No, I actually don't.
No.
I'm a premier field engineer, so I actually don't have direct contact to the Exchange product group. But they do look at the blogs, right?
Okay.
They get customer feedback. They look at the blogs. The blog articles are written to provide public information to individuals and customers out there, engineers. So we're trying to disseminate the information and get that information out to individuals and help them with a better Exchange experience.
And Exchange continues to evolve. I see that Service Pack 1 of Exchange 2013 is out in the wild now. Folks seem to be enjoying that. It seems to me, and maybe you could talk a bit about your experience with customers, 2013's been a challenging version of Exchange for some folks.
A little bit. It's quite different in terms of its functionality, in terms of, you know, some of the management of it. I mean, ultimately, it's the same product with email coming into a database, people reading the information, and then sending the emails back out,
right?
So the product really hasn't changed from that standpoint since 5.0.5.5. But the management ability of it, right? The DAG, the Database Availability Group.
Yeah.
We now only support Outlook Anywhere, right? These changes are like you'd mentioned, a bit of an interest to companies on how to better handle that. This is one of the reasons Office 365 is still growing.
Sure.
And obviously the product group has said that there will be a next version on-prem. So there's no need to go to Office 365, but there's some, you know, niceness to not have to learn all the new product changes and nuances and just push it up into the cloud.
Then there's always this argument of why are you still on-prem? Like, what is our justification for staying here?
Right. And of course, you've heard the cloud's cheaper, right?
Well, I know at least on the Azure side, the price keeps going down. Between Azure and Amazon, it's like a race to the bottom. But I don't know that mail necessarily complies with that behavior.
Correct. And I always ask the question of engineers and then companies, have you done a cost analysis on-prem?
Right.
And if they haven't, then how do you know that the cloud is cheaper?
Well, let me ask you this question. Have you met anybody who has?
No, I haven't.
I mean, that's the real truth. Most organizations, when we dig into this and they're concerned about the cost of cloud, they've really not done that cost analysis to figure out what it costs them to run their infrastructure, what that cost of downtime is, because these are not easy numbers to figure out. I think that if there's any sin the cloud has, it's that it's made it easy to figure out how much it costs.
Exactly. At least in the cloud, but not on-prem, right?
Yeah, because actually...
Yeah, you have rack space, you have floor space, you have port density, you have air conditioning, power constraints, you know, engineer's time. I mean, it's a lot of costs that you have to do an analysis on.
Yeah, and actually break all those numbers out to make them make sense. And then stay on top of them, because your numbers fluctuate more than the cloud numbers do.
Correct.
Yeah, it is an interesting set of problems. But the other question, of course, is always the feature set piece. What are you doing with Exchange, and can you still do those things in the cloud as well?
Right, because we have new features in Exchange 2013 that they continue to improve, right? Mm-hmm. Data loss protection is probably the number one thing for compliance, you know, HIPAA information, SOX compliance, that is a driving force for Exchange 2013.
Yeah, I think it's a very big piece of recognizing messaging as a strategic asset of the company, as well as also a liability. You know, having been a technical advisor for some electronic discovery work, you spend a lot of time in the email side.
Right. And now we've integrated the fast search technology into all the Wave 15 products, so it's much better. We can search cross Link, SharePoint, and Exchange all from one environment. So there's a lot of capability with that regards of information being gathered.
Yeah, it's also almost an argument against going off-prem when you start looking at that complex integration. Running your phones and your messaging and your email all in one system just feels like something you want in the house.
Yeah, at some level. And again, if you have the expertise in-house, then it makes sense to possibly keep it there. However, for smaller shops, right, that individuals wear multiple hats,
yeah,
they may not have the SharePoint or Link integration and all of these other contents that are available in the cloud at one easy click.
Yeah, it's not a very reasonable thing to want to offload that.
Yep.
So what are you seeing out in the field? People still migrating up from 2007? Are folks hanging on to Exchange that long?
Yeah, in fact, I had a call just last week, and the company is 100% on Exchange 03.
Wow.
And they asked the question, hey, this PowerShell stuff, do I need to learn it?
I actually just retired the last 2003 R2 web server at a customer. Like, and you know what? It's not like it was broken.
Exactly.
Yeah, they're tough little machines. That was a good version of the OS. I have nothing bad to say about it, except it's 10 years old.
Yeah, it's at least 10 years old. I mean, and it was developed before it was released, so it's even older than when we released it. But again, you're right. You know, the product works. People get emails. They read it. They make calendar events. They send it out.
Yep.
You know, why upgrade at some level?
What more do you want? Although the path from 2003 to 2013 isn't a trivial one. Don't you have to make a stop somewhere else? I think 2010?
Yeah, you do have to make a stop, because we actually stop the install on Exchange 2013 if we detect even a single O3 server in your environment.
Uh-oh.
But you bring up a great point. You know, almost all of our documentation says, hey, go from Exchange 03 to 10 and then to 13.
Right.
Well, probably the number one problem that companies have faced with Exchange 2010 is the hardware load balancer deployment. And I start to talk to customers, hey, if you're going to do a stopgap and only live on a version before you get to 13 for a few weeks or a month, why don't you look at going from 3 to 7 and then skip to 13? Because we've actually solved a lot of the load balancer requirements and made the deployment of load balancers much easier in Exchange 2013.
Interesting. And so just don't even step on that separation of concerns that 2010 really did. Stay with 2007, which is sort of the old style infrastructure.
Correct. Now, you have some issues, right? You have to talk through to say, well, I'm going to take 6 to 12 months to migrate.
Right.
Right. So maybe you want to introduce a DAG in 2010. And again, maybe you go to 2010 and then skip 2013, because the product group has said there will be a vNext on-prem.
Right. And you could just stay on 2010 and wait for whatever the vNext is going to be called.
Correct.
And DAGs seem to be one of these most important features. Although in some ways I feel like the DAG is almost SAN hostile. That just give me some disks. Give me some disks and leave me alone and I'll be fine.
Yeah, you're correct. It is. You know, we've gotten out of the SAN environments. We now deploy DAG in Exchange 2010 and 2013, right? Database availability groups. The SQL 2012 team has latched onto it. They call it Always On Availability Group.
Right.
Link uses it, leverages, right? But again, it's storage and a cost, right?
Yeah.
So I can go buy a 2U server with 12 spindles in it at 4 terabyte spindles and JBOD it and get 48 terabytes of usable space from a single 2U server. Go ask your SAN engineer for 48 terabytes.
And he was going to rub his hands together and say, my budget's going up this year.
Yep. Oh, and then we want three copies of everything, so go ask for three times that 48 terabytes.
Yeah, those numbers get pretty epic all of a sudden.
But again, from a cost perspective, these servers are, you know, $10,000 to $15,000 or less.
Yeah.
Compared to a SAN environment.
Yeah.
And ultimately, you know, people do virtualize Exchange 2013 still. We fully support it.
Yep.
You know, it just costs more money typically in a SAN environment. Spindles are more expensive. You have to have some virtualization product. You know, we have to have additional engineers to manage that, different SAN engineers. We lose some of the redundancy from the database availability group if a server goes down. But it's choice, right? I run into customers all the time that says, hey, I'm not even allowed to stand up a physical server. I have to virtualize.
Yeah.
We fully support you, but, you know, you will save money and time and effort if you go physical, if you can.
Right. Yeah, that seems like the VM is the norm now. You have to fight very hard to be bare metal today.
Right. Again, you have rack space, you have switch density, you have, you know, air conditioning constraints. These are all real-world constraints that companies run into.
Yeah, and I just don't see the advantage in being bare metal anymore. It doesn't seem to matter.
Right. And again, if you throw the cost in from an Exchange perspective, you know, I've talked to at least a couple of companies to go physical, and they've been nothing but happy.
Right.
They've saved money. They've saved resources. And again, remember, DAG is like RAID-level application layer.
Yeah.
Right? If I have three copies of it and one of them goes down or even two of them goes down, of the copies, I still have an available server somewhere.
Yeah, you almost don't tell, other than looking at the event log, you can't tell. It just works.
Yeah, exactly. And I would much rather walk in at 8 o'clock in the morning to my job and say, hey, email's a little slow, let me see, as opposed to getting a 4 a.m. phone call and saying, hey, can you go fix it?
Yeah, mail's down. The most dreadful phrase ever. The one thing nobody can stand to be down. And I guess the argument in the bare metal is also this recognition that your mail infrastructure, if on-premise, lives on its own. It is not a shared space in any way. It's unique hardware, you know, down to living in its own rack.
Correct.
Yeah, I think that's distinctive. I can't name a lot of that, and SQL Server databases tend to have that level of isolation. But pretty much everything else now, it's VM all the way. It's shared everywhere. We appreciate the redundancy and the scalability we get from that.
Right. Yeah, another interesting discussion about virtualization are domain controllers, right?
Yeah.
You know, you're throwing a 1U pizza box server at these domain controllers, and they've got two procs in them and 10 cores each and 64 gigs of RAM. I mean, it's almost overkill. So virtualization makes perfect sense for domain controllers.
Except you need at least one bare metal one for bringing the rack up cold.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I've run into that fun. You know, we never ever had all the ADs be down before, but now that we do, how do we get these machines back up?
Right. If one's not available, right?
Yeah. It's actually a really interesting battle. And while we're recording this, this is the week of April 7th. Of course, the great open SSL debacle is going on right now. But I guess that has no impact on Exchange at all because you guys just don't use open SSL.
But correct.
It is certainly got a lot of folks talking about certificates again and just thinking through these problems. I think if there's any issue I've seen over and over again with folks running Exchange, it's getting their certs right.
You are correct, right? Probably the second issue I run into in the field is, you know, certs improperly deployed.
You
know, is the OA name there? Is the mail CAS array name there? Is it the server name, right? And then you have to set the URLs, right? So again, reminder is for individuals out there, a cert is a listening device, right? Or listening answer.
Mm-hmm.
So if I ask for an oa.contoso.com and that value is not there, I don't get a proper response.
Yeah, you get nothing really.
Yeah.
So
I run into companies that mistype the configuration in a URL. And we troubleshoot it and say, is this the question you're asking? And the answer is, no, it's not in the cert. So you're going to get an error.
Yeah, oddly enough.
Plain and simple.
Don't you just generally recommend wildcard certs for the domain that's going to host the mail?
No, it's actually a security breach.
Really?
I mean, it is and it isn't, right? I mean, we want you to be defined to the specific names that you're using.
Right.
But I have run into some development companies that do wildcards because their developers are asking for a new cert every hour.
Yeah.
Right.
But then wouldn't you put that on a separate domain? Like, I appreciate keeping some dev behavior isolated from production behavior.
Oh, yeah, completely. Yeah.
But I do like this thinking that, no, for each of these names, I want to define cert. I want to be sure of what it is. And it's not like certificates are expensive resource-wise. You can have a bunch of them.
Right. And now with Exchange 2013, we only require two namespaces.
Right.
So we've actually made it easier, right? You get a subject alternate name cert. You have the two names on there. And like you said, they're fairly inexpensive.
Yeah. It used to be three, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was three in 2010. We needed three. So we've actually dropped one of the name spaces. So we've made the deployment easier.
Yeah, a little bit simpler.
Yep.
And if you're still running the default cert from when you installed, you need to stop that.
Exactly.
Stop it.
And the other good thing about Exchange 2013, we actually tell you 30 days before a cert expires.
Yeah.
So we actually have a warning now.
Nice. Don't just let it fail. Surprise.
Exactly.
Remember when you used to have mail? Remember all those complaints that your phones had about the certificate? Well, here we go.
Right, right.
Are you seeing that 2013's generally exerting a little more overhead than 2010, that you do have to consider your configuration before you migrate up?
Yes. I mean, the key here is that the product has changed. It's evolving. Right?
Yeah.
So, you know, I run into even Exchange 2010 deployments, and then the company says, I designed it exactly like 2003.
Ay, ay, ay. Wait.
Yeah, exactly. And then we get the same thing. Hey, I took the design from Exchange 2010, and I applied it to 2013.
Yeah.
No, things have changed, right? The CAS role has evolved, or it's changed.
Mm-hmm.
Edge reappears in SP1. For Exchange 2013, for all you Edge individuals out there.
I mean, I was very happy with 2010, and I like the Edge role. I thought it made a lot of sense.
Right. And now I'm really excited about the Edge role, at least in 2013, because we can actually run it on Windows Core Server.
Yeah.
But the thing is, again, there is zero GUI. It's PowerShell only.
PowerShell all the time.
It. Yep.
Do you actually keep some kind of stats? How many people are using the shell and versus just learning the PowerShell? Because in the end, the shell's just writing PowerShell scripts anyway, right?
Right. So Microsoft has a directive to basically make all the GUI commandlets that you click launch a PowerShell commandlet in the background.
Right.
Right. So Exchange is pretty much there, right? Because there are still several Exchange tasks that you cannot do in the GUI at all.
Yeah, and I think that's a better outcome than there's stuff you can do in the GUI you can't do in PowerShell.
Correct.
Yeah, so that's happening. I think that's happening more and more, but it also, as you get more mature here, and I got to think to some point where, because I think we're already seeing this, Exchange 2013 looks like they took a lot of the capability they developed in Exchange in the cloud and brought it in. So, you know, eventually we're going to get to this place. I don't know if we're there yet, where the version of Exchange you can run on-prem is a subset of what you can run in the cloud.
Well, that's already there.
You think it's true?
Yeah. I mean, the product group has said that there is one code that is in the cloud and one code that is on-prem.
Nice.
So the nice thing is they have over 250 million mailboxes that they have to deal with.
Yeah.
So when they fix a problem and we have a customer that, you know, has 3,000, 10,000, 20,000 mailboxes, they don't have quite the scale that the product group has already developed with.
Yeah, they don't have
to
deal
with
it.
That's what I love about it, right? Because it's the same product on both on-prem and in the cloud. So all of their development. So when we release a cumulative update or a service pack on-prem now, we know that it's already been in the cloud for a while. So they're troubleshooting it and working through the process before we even get it on-prem.
Yeah, they've scaled it in a way we can't even imagine.
Correct.
Yeah, so it's definitely, it's already there. It's just the fact that they're keeping the capabilities in sync, I just think that's going to eventually diverge. But, thinking back to PowerShell, if you're not working on Exchange enough to actually memorize these PowerShell commands, you should probably be moving it to the cloud.
Correct.
Where somebody, if you're really running substantial Exchange infrastructure yourself, then you're in PowerShell enough that it's in your head.
Right. And PowerShell is amazing, right? I mean, you can set a task to email yourself information every morning, poor man's monitoring, right?
Yeah.
You give outputs to, you know, audits of the mailboxes, how many items are in each mailbox, how many items are in each folder in people's mailboxes. I mean, these are things you just cannot do in the GUI.
Yeah.
Right. You can give managers reports. You can give statistics. You can get information. It's just an amazing output.
It's just a deep understanding of what's actually going on in Exchange.
Right.
And again, if that's not important to you, you could probably move to the cloud.
Exactly. Another thing I run into on-prem is LDAP latency, right? So our Active Directory domain controllers, and they obviously Exchange is pretty unintelligent without Active Directory.
Right.
And so the number one problem I've run into in the field is LDAP latency. My current record for LDAP latency is 69,000 milliseconds.
So 69 seconds, a minute.
69 seconds, over a minute of latency. So Exchange asks a question, hey, I need to know who Richard is, and LDAP takes over a minute to respond.
But again, hang on. I'm dusting off the AD from 2000 to get you your answer.
Right.
Oh, man.
So we have a PowerShell command that says, hey, I can statically exclude some domain controllers, either the offending domain controller or, you know, a list of domain controllers. I could also statically include a list, but if that list goes down, right, then
yeah,
you're telling Exchange you're smarter than it is, so stop working. But again, you know, we have to look at this holistically from an Exchange perspective, from an Active Directory perspective. We have to worry about link integration if you're doing that on-prem. And again, putting it up in the cloud, you don't have to worry about any of that at most levels, right?
It just works.
It just works.
Yeah, it makes all that stuff go away. Yeah, it's hard to argue with that, but it's always folks that are going to be in that transition. Do you see folks actually staying in the hybrid mode? Like they're actually hovering between some stuff on-prem, some stuff in the cloud?
Oh, completely, right? Now, we're not asking the question, if you're going to the cloud, we're now asking the question, how much are you putting in the cloud, right? I mean, the answer might be zero, but more likely it's going to be 20, 30, 40%.
I guess the question is, can you get to 100%?
Exactly. Yeah, I actually ran into a company last week, and they are getting rid of their data center in a major city.
Wow.
They are taking every single server and every piece of application and moving it to the cloud.
And some of them are just going to be VMs, but some of them can be services.
Correct. Yep.
Yeah.
They still have two other data centers, so they're completely hybrid, right?
Yeah.
They're looking at the choice, they're looking at the costs and the options from one environment to the other.
But I got
to
think this poor guy with the 69-second latency should probably get the rest of the way to the cloud.
Yes, exactly.
And that said, you know, actually having a significant chunk of your AD living out there, not just in here, that's an interesting challenge. I think that's the point where most people get really concerned. Active Directory is always something we've kept close held.
Right. And now with Azure, right, you can have both in the cloud and on-prem and have it all work.
And just to have it run right. But you do have to maintain your half of the problem.
Exactly.
And is that mostly an ADFS issue, just getting that set up right, setting the rules correctly?
Yeah, I mean, ADFS is involved in terms of setting up the secure communication between all that environment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then that's got to be monitored and maintained. If that doesn't work, a whole bunch of stuff breaks.
Yeah. Yeah, there's this thing called the internet.
Yeah.
And it's got to work.
Yeah, it's a little unreliable, too. It's got,
right.
It's got its issues. I was a while ago, we were dealing with a fully redundant system that we had different internet connections, different pathways to everything. We'd done a really great job. And then we found out that the contractor had actually run both internet connections on the same telephone pole, the one that got hit by the truck.
Exactly.
That's the only reason we knew. We never would have known, except we found the one point of failure, and that's what got hit.
Yeah, and almost every company I've run into has that. They have two providers through one connection.
Right.
Now, I did run into one company. They actually had three physically separate connections
yes.
in different corners of the building because a truck ran into one of the walls
yeah.
once.
Yeah. Well, that's what we ended up doing with my customer. We had run separate wires in separate directions. We just didn't realize that as it left the building, it went to the same pole.
Correct.
Yeah. That's a lot of stuff to have to think about, you know? And how many times are we going to do this and then say, or we could move it to the cloud?
Right. Move it to the cloud.
Yes.
There's another issue that I actually wrote about on the eHello site that talks about sleepy NICs. And so on servers, on a lot of NIC drivers, right, the network interface, it allows the power management setting to go to sleep.
Wow. Is that ever, I don't think that should ever be turned on for a server.
I totally agree.
Yeah.
And we're all a little dumbfounded to say, why is the server product group even allowing this to turn on? So, because it is a server product, but it, just in case I want the network card to go to sleep, let me try, right?
Yeah.
So I run into this all the time, right? So DAG members, the databases randomly mount from one server to the other, and individual engineers come in and they say, what happened, right? Well, do you have a sleepy NIC? And lo and behold, they turn that setting off and the problem goes away.
The world is a better place.
Right. And then 6 months later, they go to update the driver. And what do you think turns back on?
Well, this is where stuff like desired state configuration and so forth really come into play, isn't it? To actually snapshot the state of a machine for those kinds of details so that
Correct.
You can catch it when you do the upgrade.
Right. And then if an engineer comes along and makes a change and backs it out real quick and someone says, what happened? And he says, no. Right. We can see exactly what happened. Right. So desired configuration manager, right? DCM.
Yeah.
Great options.
Yeah.
And again, because you want to know what's going on in your environment or send it to the cloud.
Yeah. If you don't want to know, let it go. It's okay. You'll be better off. You'll live longer anyway. It's a lot less frustrating. Well, what's next for you? Are you mostly working in the field these days?
Yeah, I've actually started traveling quite a bit again.
Mm-hmm.
I've actually drawn basically an hour and a half zone around Denver. I'm based out of Denver here.
Right.
And so I go to Kansas City and Salt Lake City a lot, get down to Phoenix, because there's engineers stationed all across the United States,
sure.
Right? So we try and stay as local as possible. And my premier field engineer title gives me the field expertise of going into places and helping customers out.
But and then obviously the customer has to have this premier service, which is a non-trivial thing. And are you also one of the workshop folks? You're actually running things for your customers?
Right. So I'm doing open workshops, again, premier workshops, exchange workshops. We offer these in regional buildings for customers, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you'd mentioned the closed workshops that customers can bring an engineer like myself on site, and
right.
we can deliver these. Or we can have open workshops where customers send two or three individuals, and we have multiple companies at the same time. These are a great offering, right? I mean, because being in front of individuals like a classroom is a great experience. Yes, there's the online experience option, right? There's some web pages out there that have videos on how to do stuff. But again, the interactivity of individuals in person is still, I think, just very valuable overall.
Well, and I also get the sense that, especially in the life of an exchange administrator, it's a lonely life. So I got to think, I've seen this at Tech Ed and other conferences, three or four exchange administrators get together and just commiserate, you know, over the challenges of what it actually takes to run that infrastructure for their company. And they are the one.
Right.
So they don't even realize that's going on. And just to be clear, even with the open classes, you have to be a premier customer. The public cannot go to these classes.
Correct, right? In these offerings, the premier offerings, right? Now there's
right.
other partners that offer publicly available workshops, and they're really good also.
Yeah.
But the premier offering from Microsoft, again, this additional service that gives, you know, workshops and premier field engineers, you get phone support, right, direct away, escalation support, a lot of options in terms of availability to individuals.
Yeah, and I think, you know, for some of the listeners, you might want to consider just looking at what the premier services provide, because a lot of people just don't even know that this stuff exists, and it can really help you take care of your infrastructure.
Right. And again, reading blogs, right? We have the eHello blog that we
yeah.
mentioned, which is the Exchange Team blog site. There's the scripting guy, right?
Yeah.
That's a great one for scripts and PowerShell information. The Ask DS, right, the Directory Services Team, that's an amazing blog. We actually have a PFE blog site also, where PFE engineers go out and put stuff there, or there's references, right? What do we find in the field? What happens out there? So some great opportunities.
For sure. Well, Mike, it's really fun to talk to you. Thanks so much for taking the time to come on the show.
All right, well, thank you.
And we'll talk to you next week on Run As Radio.